This week on the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast, the Vanity Fair article previewing Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker, is out, and we have all the thoughts about what came out in this article. So much new information. Carrie Russell's character, Richard E. Grant, J.J. Abrams was interviewed, Kathy Kennedy. So much to talk about on the droids. Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris, Ryan, and Sam, I am Mike, and all four of the droids are back together again. It's felt like weeks, and it has been, that we've all been in one place. And what a fitting time for us to get back together and have us all on a pod when there's big news and a lot of new information about The Rise of Skywalker, the final film of the Skywalker saga. So good to be back with all four of you. Honestly, I know that we're going to get a lot more tangents because we've just got a lot more people with things to say, and I'm excited for it.
It feels like we just blew up the Death Star and we're all reuniting again.
Who doesn't get the medal?
We're playing with a full Sabacc deck.
Oh,
hey. It's as if Vanity Fair really was doing a cover piece on us.
Right.
It's like they knew. Chris is back. I mean, back. Last week we had the three of us. Chris is back. We're not sure if he's the fifth Cylon. Is that the right franchise?
I haven't been activated yet, but I am back, and I come back now a little more Star Wars experienced than I was before. I had the opportunity.
I'm sorry?
I had the opportunity to visit one of the premier sets of the Star Wars franchise.
No, I'm sorry. You said Star Wars experienced?
Yes. A little more wiser. A little wiser.
Sam, it's better if we don't know.
Please define
it's between
term.
Chris and Chris. It's between Chris and Star Wars.
Right. I've come back.
I'm old enough, I'll understand.
You'll understand. No, I'm a little wiser. Went to the don't know the name of it. Can't remember it. It's in Italian, but we'll post it. We'll post a picture.
Okay. Well, now everybody knows where Chris was.
Buca di Beppo.
It's the mansion where Darth Vader and Padme secretly get married.
Is that Lake Como?
It's on Lake Como. It's a.
Is that where Clooney lives?
It's near where Clooney lives. Honestly, God, it's not too far.
Did you see the Clooney?
No, he's not. He wasn't out that day, but we did stop.
Did they
and
have
knock.
Signs up saying Clooney isn't?
We did stop and knock and leave pies and pieces of our hair and things like that, but he wasn't around.
He didn't see his shadow. Six more weeks
exactly.
Before he comes out.
The river
if you'd left some Nespresso. Right?
The lake was frozen over, and they say on a warm day he'll come out and just touch his toe to it, and it'll be water again. So that's legend has it. Actually, it is very funny. All of them, like, you could see like these beautiful, like, you know how like when you go to somewhere you see like little like street art paintings and people are selling prints of those kind of things. One of the popular prints on Lake Como is his house. And like, so they attempt to just say the house name, and then in parentheses below it always says George Clooney.
No love for a mall.
Yeah, it's pretty great. So anyhow, I saw that classic Attack of the Clones site on what happened to be the anniversary of the release of Attack of the Clones. That was just happenstance.
Sure it was, Chris.
Yeah.
So my girlfriend planned that, so thank her for that serendipity. That was good, but it is a beautiful mansion, and I do
she
recommend.
She did consult with us. She said, what's Chris's favorite Star Wars movie?
Exactly.
And we said Attack of the Clones.
Well, she said, yeah, what is historically the most thought about scene in all of the Star Wars franchise?
And we said, ooh, that wedding.
Was it the wedding
at George Clooney's house?
Was it the wedding and the sand scene? It's there, right?
Well, the sand scene takes place in a field.
No.
Yeah. He complains about sand right at that place, right?
No, it's when he's playing with the grass.
You're right, okay.
Yeah,
right,
and he does, I don't know if there's a soundstage or
what
they
used. Am I
right?
I think I'm right.
I thought sand was in the field. When they're riding those weird creatures. We did do that, though. There are those creatures roaming about, so we did ride those. So that was actually a real thing.
And you did the fake out, all right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if you're there with your girlfriend, you know, it's a beautiful spring day. You're kind of enjoying the time.
Exactly.
It's like you gotta fake out that you had a massive head trauma.
They're full of helium. That's why they're so bulbous.
Looking up the video now, I'm pretty sure that you were standing at the idol-like sand spot, Chris.
Wow, that's
oh my god,
that's pretty amazing.
And you didn't even know. All you kept saying was, I wish we were at that field.
Honestly, there was a lot of locations in the place. It took me a while. I had to find out by looking at a picture from the movie and then looking at the tree branches, because there was a tree that had a very distinct branch. And so I was kind of framing shots around, and another tourist was kind of like, what are you doing? And I was like, Star Wars was filmed here. They just like, they just kind of blankly stared at me and walked away. But
I believe the location, the rest of the trip, she just followed them and said, can I come with you?
I believe the location is called Non Mi Piace La Sabbia, which is like sand.
No,
the house began with a B.
That's nice,
like,
Sam.
If the house began with a B, like Bibliogeno or something like that.
No, I'm pretty sure
Oh boy. All right. I made a lot of Italian.
I'm Italian.
Fans.
This is okay.
I got a lot of
just
Italian.
Just so you guys
fans.
Know, this is okay. I'm giving this the clear.
I made us a lot of Italian fans. But anyhow, it is a beautiful place and it was really kind of cool. I think this was the only time I was ever near or like stepping on somewhere where the thing I love was like created. So I thought that it was kind of a cool experience, even though it is that kind of scene and from that movie. But it was still pretty special. So,
Chris, that's kind of remarkable because you think about it, and a lot of other film series, a lot of other franchises we love, you can go and be like, hey, look, I'm at the place where The Dark Knight was shot or something like that. Star Wars, it's very difficult to get to a place that Star Wars was shot unless, say, you live in Ireland and you just went to The Last Jedi's locations. But, I mean, that's part of the lore of Star Wars is that it does always feel like a planet that you could visit or feels like something that, you know, obviously is not close by. Whereas a lot of other great series, you could probably find a place where Indiana Jones was shot. You could go back and find Jaws. There are tangible places you can get to that you can't in Star Wars.
Usually for someone to take a step in the place where what they love was conceived, they either have to be in a hotel room in the Catskills or the back of a Buick.
Okay.
Chris got to do it in lovely Italy.
Okay.
What?
I was going to say, Mike, to your point, like we, you know, obviously we all are, you know, in New York City, and it was like, I work in Tribeca. And you know, just like walking the one day, I was like, why are there a bunch of people lined up to take photos? And it's because like I was right by the Ghostbusters firehouse, like you know, which was like I didn't even know it was there. Like you can literally in this city, you can walk into shooting locations, but like you say, with Star Wars, it is much more rare.
Yeah, it's a rarity. So my next list would probably be Luke's old house. Can you still do that? Is that still there?
I think it's still there. I believe people are still going in Tunisia and checking that out. I would say I would choose going to Skellig Michael first and checking out The Last Jedi's Octo location.
That would be cool.
We have gotten into a lot of stuff in 10 minutes that has not been the Vanity Fair article, and I think we got to get to that because there's so much to unpack from all the information, all of the news that was broken by Vanity Fair, and so nice to have this. What are we? This is May. We're 7 months out, and we're getting closer and closer to episode 9. But make sure that you follow us, rate and review us on iTunes, Twitter DroidsPod, Instagram DroidsPod, Facebook DroidsPodcast, Gmail DroidsPod@gmail.com. And of course, check out Coping Mechanics on YouTube and Twitch. Ryan is playing video games, talking about them, about how he deals with his anxiety. And Ryan, you've got a lot more anxiety to deal with because we have a whole lot of information to get into on episode 9. How you feeling today, Ryan?
Well, it's going really well. Just a quick note on Coping Mechanics. As I figure out a release schedule, it's currently on a short hiatus. I realized that I may have bit off more than I could chew in my planned 3 videos a week. So I'm trying to figure out the best way to handle that. But please go and subscribe. There will be new ones soon, especially since my anxiety is getting jacked up.
Right.
Since I saw this Vanity Fair article.
I mean, there are headlines here. You know, we learned that the Knights of Ren are in this movie. Zori Bliss is the character played by Carrie Russell. Richard E. Grant, we saw that introducing Orbox, which are a horse-like character, another one like the Fathiers. We've got more. We know the Force. We're going to learn more about the First Order and the origins of the First Order. New planets, all new locations. We'll get into all of it, but I guess biggest reaction each of you had when you read the article, saw some of the images from Annie Leibovitz, what was your first big takeaway?
The thing that I noticed the most that was like kind of story related was the Knights of Ren revelation.
I was going to say, I think that's maybe the biggest, the biggest, like, I don't know, bombshell feels like even too big of a word, right. But like that was the bombshell to me. It was like, oh wow. Like the thing that fans have, you know, many fans have clamored for, it was unclear. It does seem like it's an idea that JJ wants to revisit. He wants to do more with, and you know, I'm excited. The thing for me to name something different was, oh man, I freaked out when I saw the picture with the ore box. I was like, this is so cool. You know, Star Wars is obviously hugely influenced by, you know, the westerns of cinema, and it's like, this is unquestionably, you know, it's two riders on horseback, one of them has a bow and arrow. It's right. You know, it's very, very cool and evocative imagery, and it's a part of Star Wars that I love leaning into. It was one of the cool elements that I really liked about Solo, was that it felt very western. So that was I think that was my big moment.
It's definitely cool to see it, the kind of always citing Lawrence of Arabia as a big influence for the first Star Wars, as George Lucas has. It's kind of cool to see it come full circle in that way a little bit, especially when you see like Finn and Poe kind of in their like desert gear. Like, who knows what they're going to do? I'm so excited for that storyline. I've heard that they're going to be buddied up a lot more this movie. I think, yeah, along seeing the Knights of Ren, that was the first image. And I know these are all kind of just portraits taken by Annie Leibovitz, a kind of set-up photos, if you will. I don't know how involved they are in the behind-the-scenes. I think that one with J.J. Abrams with the Knights, that looks like he's just directing there or just trying to get through. But
we don't believe that's appearing in the movie.
Yeah. But I think the one that got me and what I was most excited for is to find out who Carrie Russell was going to be. And it's very cool to see her in this kind of pseudo Boba Fett-ish looking armor, kind of almost looks like it references a little bit of the Mandalorian series, a little bit in that kind of the gunslinger dual wielding two pistols and just the term scoundrel, though, which I thought was great, because traditionally in Star Wars, scoundrel has a very ambiguous connotation of good or evil. So it's kind of, what can that character get from the other characters, which I think is a great role for Carrie Russell, just coming off The Americans.
My first big reaction, and I sent it to all of you, was the Luke Skywalker shot with R2, flames, smoke behind him. I think people thought that this was going to be another flashback to the destruction of the temple by Kylo Ren, but he clearly looks like he's the older version of Luke that is post Last Jedi or end of Last Jedi. So this could be a Force spirit Luke. But not obviously seeing those digital effects on him.
Right.
But it's interesting that R2's kind of sidled up right next to him, because R2's not going to be a Force ghost, but maybe he's just feeling like he's missed his master, and even though he's a Force ghost, he gets up close and personal. We know that these may not be actual shots from the movie, but I think it does. They usually don't put someone who's not going to be prominent in the film in one of these shots. But I just had so many questions about it. It made me excited, despite all the things that Mark Hamill has been doing in interviews and everything on the internet that he's been posting. It just brought me back to being like, oh, that's so cool, and I want to know more about this. And yes, I'm so glad that he's in it, and I want to know how Luke imparts more wisdom, even though he will not be in it for maybe more than one scene, a la Obi-Wan in Empire, or two scenes that he had. And so I love that shot, and it made me want to make it a desktop background, which I think a lot of these shots have
that. I mean, these images are beautiful on their own. Like, if these weren't even for a movie, they'd be like, wow, these are just amazing pictures.
It's almost like Annie Leibovitz shot them.
Right.
I think that one of the biggest headlines, because we all talked about it, was the Knights of Ren. And I think let's talk a little bit more about the Knights of Ren, because at this point, you know, there's just possibility that we could learn a little bit more about where this story is going. Interesting note, Vanity Fair had a little bit where they confirmed that the Knights of Ren are in the trailer, and that is who Kylo Ren is attacking. And they even used the word mowing down in that brief bit of the teaser trailer. They then, in a Reddit Ask Me Anything, I think from the writer of this piece, he said, oh yeah, that's incorrect. We don't know that those are the Knights of Ren that he's mowing down, but visually that looks what they are.
Sure.
And if that is the case, is that Kylo turning against his old protégés because he's now found himself on the side of good as the film goes on?
Interesting.
We don't know.
Also, we don't know necessarily, and this isn't a correction of you, but we don't know if they're his protégés or if he kind of inherited the Knights of Ren as the leader.
No, absolutely. You know? I kind of use that term without knowing much about who they are.
Hey, man. Right. It's cool.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a side story where he... A side story, not a sad story. But it may be a sad story. Where he defeats the Knights of Ren to join Snoke or something like that. It could also be a flashback from that sense, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, maybe they're like a lion pack where he has to defeat the leader.
Right.
I just immediately on seeing the photograph that accompanies this with JJ's obviously in the middle, sort of like you know looking at and directing these guys, and I just immediately was like, all these guys head to toe all black in 50, 60 pounds of gear in the Wadi Rum desert. It must be so miserable. Probably all were like, can't we shoot this on the snow planet?
Did you see the one guy has literal flamethrowers for arms?
Yeah.
Everybody's like, you know, George did this on green screen.
Well, it reminded me of another George. It reminded me a little bit of visually, this image also reminds me of George Miller's Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, sure.
With the way they're all individually geared up, and it almost looks like it's custom gear that they might have made or acquired themselves, found interesting.
They look kind of like a bunch of scavengers. And
they also said that one of the new villains' name is Testus Maximus, yes? That's a little mad. That's from a Max Heads out there.
Yep. Grab your guzzling and strap on in. We're going Mad Max.
We're entering Valhalla. Witness us.
I love the Buster sword that guy has in the background, too. That's huge. Their weapons are comical.
I'm curious, where are you getting that Buster sword? Where is that term coming from?
That's a Final Fantasy thing.
That's a Final Fantasy VII, yes?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, exactly. The big sword.
I always thought that was a kind of a weak name just because it sounds like something you'd call a little kid. Look at you with your Buster sword.
Or it's like a famous 1920s comedian, silent film comedian. Hey, it's me,
it's
Buster
Sword.
Yeah,
it's really physical.
His thing was that he'd always trip onto swords.
Is this guy in the foreground, is he facing JJ or is he facing us and he just has a cloak over his head?
I've been staring at this for hours and it's like a magic eye puzzle. Or it's like a cube, you know when you draw a cube just out of lines and you're like, is it going this way? Or is it going this way?
Are you talking about Ronan the Accuser?
I'm talking about the Ronan looking dude. Yeah. I genuinely thought literally all day that he is facing us, and now I'm looking and I'm like, I actually think he's facing away.
Yeah, I think he's
Look
facing
at
away.
The feet.
Ugh,
Look at the feet.
Guys.
And traditionally somebody's arms aren't behind them carrying a weapon. So
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, I'll wait to see stupid stuff you say in the next few minutes.
You already do.
JJ, maybe JJ's wearing a hoodie in the desert. Maybe it wasn't that hot.
Very confused by that.
It could have been
night. I think it's a sunburn.
That's probably night for day. The rare.
That's what
rare
you
night
those
for
day.
The rare night for
they
day.
They throw that yellow filter on.
Yep. That's a layup that's blasted that sunshine right there.
Speaking of JJ, in this article, there's a lot of time that was spent with the actors, the director, Kathleen Kennedy, at Star Wars Celebration in Chicago, and so the interview with JJ was conducted there. Interesting setup, and I just thought this was a moment that I found a little odd. I don't know if it was a sly jab or a commentary that the writer was making. It said that, you know, the most distinctive feature of J.J. Abrams' dark curly hair is it's upswept in a way that is slightly suggestive of devil horns. Never had that impression myself.
Interesting.
Kind of odd thing to have in the piece, but...
Yeah.
That is odd. I also thought it was strange... go ahead. Sorry, Sam.
I also clocked that phrase as being really weird, and I read it. I think they were going for like a devilishness or impishness, mm-hmm. in the sense of like he's someone who loves to like, he loves to toy with viewers in like a fun way.
Sure.
But I was also like, I don't think I like I'd, I don't it was think a long JJ walk that, for me yeah. to get there, and I was like, I don't think that was written super clearly. I'll jump ahead. Spoiler: I didn't think this article was written very well. I thought the information was really interesting,
sure. yeah,
but I was like, who or like how did he organize it? Was I thought it was yeah. really poorly written.
I thought there was a shocking amount of like page room dedicated to what Anthony Daniels' memoir should have been named,
which was really weird. And then I thought the follow up story about the naming of the memoir was very odd as well.
Yeah, I just thought it. It's just a lot of real estate, you know what yeah. I mean?
It's a five-cover edition where we can see all the different ways that naming would have appeared on the cover of his biography, right? That's how Vanity Fair is doing their next issue.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And then they had Annie Leibovitz take yeah. pictures of, like, him writing down the different titles. It was just a lot. That was a lot of waste.
Back to some of the quotes from JJ. There's a lot that he says in this interview. I mean, in terms of, obviously, he says a lot of words. Does he give away a lot? Not really. But the thing that I found interesting was, I think a little bit later on, he talks about how he felt for Episode 7, The Force Awakens, a little bit more beholden to Star Wars in a way that was interesting. Yeah. I was doing yeah. what to the best of my ability, I felt Star Wars should be. But as his time has gone on, and he's been informed by Rian Johnson's take mm-hmm. and also seeing the development of the way people responded a little bit to The Force Awakens, he said he felt a slight more renegade. It felt slightly more like, you know, F it, I'm going to do the thing that feels right because it does, not because it adheres to something, which sounds great in theory. you know, obviously there are some issues we've all had with J.J. Abrams' storytelling. But I do like the idea that he's not necessarily diving so deeply into nostalgia. And part of that is this movie doesn't have to do what The Force Awakens did. It does have to do right. something completely different in yeah. ending the series. But in terms of bringing people back to Star Wars, he probably has more ability to tell it the way he wants because we're in a totally different place than we were for Episode 7.
Right.
And this yeah. is kind of having their cake and eating it too, because, you know, JJ yeah. saying, like, I just went with my instincts on this one, is him saying, like, I made a populist movie. So, it, you know, it's not... He's not known to be, like, the edgiest. And I love him. I think he's great.
Well,
like
I also...
He is, like, his instincts seem to be to, you know, be very audience-pleasing. And that's cool.
I also thought what was really fascinating, and it's in that same section, and I think it's maybe on either side of that quote, Mike, that you just read, which is where he's, like, talking about how so much of The Force Awakens was diving into nostalgia and looking back at what made Star Wars so special to him and blah, 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 and audiences and everything. But that he's like, that's why with this movie, we're really leaning away from nostalgia. This is about living with like the problems of the mm-hmm. past and
right.
looking towards the future. And I right. thought that was really like, if from no other perspective than a marketing press perspective, it's a very savvy like reading of the tea leaves that like people are already, there's a backlash to this yep. nostalgia craze.
Being
like there's already people who don't
sure.
like Stranger Things and all these like
sure.
throwbacks. Yeah. And it's like this weird thing where I'm looking at the imagery from the movie is called The Rise of Skywalker. Like it's a nostalgia piece, but they've already started planting the seeds of how it's not, which I find really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it is. It's kind of funny because it ushered in that whole kind of movement as well of like
100%. Yeah, they're so responsible for
yeah,
the wave
kind
of nostalgia.
Yeah, yeah, and so, but I do think it's funny that I agree with you, Mike, that the concept of inheriting debt and like how do you fix that? I mean, I think that's like that's a great kind of socio-political message to kind of parallel, especially currently, like and. And I think they're not going to lean into it too hard, but I mean, I think the undertones are there, and I think it's kind of where a lot of people's heads are at also, kind of like, now we have this mess, what do we do with it? It's not just about good and evil anymore, it's about how do you fix things.
And I think people were talking about that Star Wars is never like blatantly political. It's political, but it's more in the storytelling and sort of like it's not it's a little more subtle. It's
right.
informed
I was
by the
up.
Era of what people, and they've talked about that with coming out of Vietnam in the 70s.
Exactly.
And what George, that wasn't even in the piece. They talked about that there. But I felt like the pull quote they used, and you talked about it, is the trilogy is about the young generation, the new generation having to deal with all the debt that has come before. Mm-hmm. Clearly, that is meant to connect to an audience that's maybe feeling that way, that is more... they're the, probably the target audience of what they want this movie to be versus the aging audience of Star Wars fans.
Right.
They want to connect to an audience that's younger that maybe feels this way.
Doesn't doesn't that make Star Wars overtly political, though?
Well, that's
This is what I think is funny. Sorry, I just
and
jumped
I, I'm
in.
I'm saying that,
that
in a good
was,
way. I think that's a great thing about
it. For sure.
That was just, Mike, like the line in the article where it says, like, Star Wars has never been overtly political was, like, that was the writer saying that for Vanity Fair.
Yeah.
And that's, like, one of the lines I highlighted being, like, who is writing this piece and who organized this piece? Because it's literally talking about George Lucas responding to Vietnam and the way what we needed in the 70s is different than what we needed in the 90s is different than what we needed today.
Yeah.
And it was, like... I like that line felt like such a lie. Like it felt belied. excuse me, not a lie. It felt belied by the piece. Is I guess what I was trying to say.
It feels like the opposite of what like would be said, which was like contrary to what many people think. Star Wars has always been overtly political. You know, like where it's
Yeah, it was a bizarre line. I didn't like it. I didn't like the way the piece was written. I really didn't.
Sam doesn't like the article.
Sam, all I cared about was the new information. Yeah. I'm like, I didn't care how he wrote it. I'm like, tell me what's new.
I'm reading this very just like objectively of just like, okay, what's this guy's name? Okay, what's her name? Okay,
yeah, what's
where
this
are they
planet?
At? I literally scrolled through all the pictures. I was like, they're not naming the desert planet. It must be Tatooine. Nope, they've named it. It's called Pazzana.
Why?
Lev Grossman. I'm
why do they
blast.
Need so many different... desert planets?
I guess
I didn't get that either. Oh wait, we brought it back to the way it all started in this trilogy and the first trilogy. We're just, on a sand planet.
Even I loved when they went back to Tatooine, and I guess you had to though, because that's where he was born. Whatever.
Honestly though, I take a difference. I actually like I don't mind that they avoid naming things, and I feel like it's to counteract anticipated like the fans who there's a certain contingent of fandom who, like, for better or worse, and it just depends on where you fall, like some people do really get into the nitty-gritty and the details and the consistency of things like that.
Sure.
And I almost just feel like, well, it's just much safer if you're a creative, you know, if you're making something new. And you want to, I want to set this on Tatooine, but I want it to be my Tatooine as a director,
also,
right? So just don't call it Tatooine. Call it Pasana, which also, that's another thing. I love, oh man, name me all the planets. Man, that I love
what
that.
What a fun, like, little
bit
of writing that.
is that how we think it's pronounced? The snow-dusted planet where we see Kerry Russell is Kijimi?
I think it'll be the Kijimi system.
All right. Now, you're right, though. Also, and Tatooine is probably on lock. It birthed both Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker. Everybody's probably like, keep an eye on that planet.
It's the Slytherin. It's the Slytherin of the Outer Rim.
They're probably like, hey, you know what? No one go there. Just bad stuff happens when people come out of this place.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, so just to play, I guess that was just to play a counterpoint to what you were saying in terms of, like, why isn't it Tatooine? It's like, well, I enjoy that it's... Yeah, it's the same idea, but it is in a different location.
Yeah, you're
right. It's a little different, and it allows the freedom to say, like, this is why there are horse beasts here.
Exactly.
Or not, you know what I mean?
You're not
going to
go there, and you're going to be like, where are all the Jawas? Where are the sand people? Like, where are the pod racing courses and things like that? You don't have to worry about all that. It gives you a little more freedom.
That's what I think, yeah.
Unrelated at all, Chris. Did you think at all about if there were Tuscan Raiders when you were in the Tuscany area of Italy? Or
all
were you not,
of the time.
Okay.
And I'll tell you what, they were everywhere. We had to go in by dark.
People didn't like that Chris kept going, come here, little one.
Come here, little one.
No need to be afraid.
Well, hello there. No need to be afraid.
Chris, you talked briefly about Kerry Russell's character, Zori Bliss. She's a scoundrel. I guess any other thoughts anybody else took away? I do like the design. She does look like she's in Daft Punk, right?
I mean, I have a big thought. I was like, that looks like a Xenomorph. like from Alien.
Interesting.
Oh, it does.
Like her helmet looks like it's out of the Alien franchise mixed with Daft Punk. It's like if Daft Punk was like going to the Alien cosplay.
The third member of Daft Punk.
I thought it was cool because, and this is the second time JJ has done this. The first time I think was with Adam Driver, which is, I think that he's successfully cast these actors to be in these masked roles. Obviously, I don't know if she'll be in her mask the whole time, but she and Adam Driver have this very specific like physicality, and I think that like one of her like strengths as an actress is like she has this very like graceful physicality, and the same thing with Adam Driver. And I think that the ability, like even the way that they move, and I think that it's cool that he's doing that again, because Adam Driver, you know, the whole first half of Force Awakens is such an amazing performance where you can't even see his face. It's because he controls his movement so well, and I think that she has a similar skill that way.
Yeah,
do you think she's a descendant of the Rocketeer?
Yeah,
that is a very the Rocketeer. That's a good influence.
But also, I noticed that there's like a new kind of pattern schema in this era of Star Wars, and it's kind of like the, you can see it on the belt and a little bit on the guns, like that kind of triangular pattern. It's starting to get a little more prevalent, and I think in all the costuming and stuff. You saw it a little bit in Force Awakens and Last Jedi, and I feel like it's kind of cool now to see a thematic design world developing in this new saga. Like they've kind of established a new set of design language that we're starting to like get used to, which is very fun.
I love it. I'm also going to dive. Let's actually, while we're, I think we all have it up in front of us. I'm looking at it right now. And as I'm diving in, I'm also looking and I'm saying like that the helmet specifically, it looks welded together. Like it's been, you know, compiled or made or remade, which we had the shot in the trailer and the teaser of Kylo Ren's helmet being reforged and like, you know, welded back together. But then there's also an interesting, like sort of just where I guess it would be like the sort of ear gap, you know, would be for the helmet. I can't tell if it's, there's like some technology that looks like some circuitry and stuff. And I can't tell if that is, you know, exterior to the helmet, like it's potentially a listening device or a communicator, or if that is actually a view beneath the helmet and there is some kind of like apparatus attached directly to her.
A lobot,
it looks like the reverse headphones.
Yeah.
If you point out, Lando is wearing a lobot wristband in the image of him.
My God, do you think she's Lobot?
New Lobot.
She's new Lobot. NLB? New Lobot?
But
Lobot.
Sam, you describing that made me think something. Maybe she's the one rebuilding his helmet, and it's not Kylo, but she's bringing it to Kylo as like an offering to be in his graces.
She got some furry little hands under them gloves.
Maybe she's a past, maybe she's a past Knight of Ren.
Guys.
Would that be a cool thing, like a Valkyrie and Thor kind of?
We're breaking this movie wide open. Y'all heard it here first.
I gotta see.
We probably shouldn't even continue because it could be spoiled.
His Lobot watch. That's neat. I hope. I mean, conceivably, Lobot could live forever, right? Is he a what? Is he a human? Is he a robot?
Human droid, android.
I gotta settle this. I mean, I suppose IMDb. Like I suppose IMDb could have settled this for me years ago, but. Lobot is not Principal Strickland, right?
Ryan, no. I swear to God, I was just going to ask that question.
Not the same actor.
Not the same actor, literally just both bald men.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say, even though maybe factually no, I'm going to say yes. I'm going to tell people.
My whole life I thought they were the same.
Same thing.
So before
did think it was weird when he said to Han that no Solo has ever made anything of themselves in the history of Hill Valley.
Well, the whole thing that Chewbacca has that book from the 1950s so he can off-track bet is a little weird, but...
The Father Almanac?
Yeah, exactly.
Sam, you got a Back to the Future reference?
Sam.
I love that we can see the flux capacitor of the Falcon. And
no, he just took that guy's wallet.
Tip yip.
When R2 when R2 started playing Johnny B. Good, that's where they lost me.
That was it. He said, "Your droid parents will love it."
All right, before we move on to any other topic, I think something that is noticeably absent, with the exception of one mention in the article, not in any of the images, where's Kelly Marie Tran? Come on, guys. You just going to bury her? Is she in this movie for 5 seconds, and then they say she had to return to her home planet?
This is where I think it's interesting, where I liked the writing of this article, because the writer, you know, clearly... you know, reference that it's like, oh yeah, they said, you know, as he said at Celebration, Finn is, you know, single and ready to mingle, you know, implying that, you know, he's open to any kind of relationship, and they're kind of seemingly abandoning or backing off from the Kelly Marie Tran relationship, the Rose Finn relationship that was starting to be established in The Last Jedi. And this, I did feel like the writer didn't quite let them off the hook. Like he, like the writer reminded everybody, like, yeah, they shared a kiss. It seemed like that was building to something. Mm-hmm. Like fans are interested, but they're definitely from the Disney Lucasfilm JJ camp, and John Boyega himself. Like they seem to be keeping that close to the vest. It's either going to be a surprise that relationship does come to fruition, or they're trying to abandon it, which would be really sad.
The way they're playing up Finn and Poe makes me wonder if they're going to go down a fan service-y moment. Not necessarily of them having a right. relationship, but just spending more time on that.
I thought
that.
You were going to say sex.
spending more time on them right. than maybe what was the promising relationship of Kelly Marie Tran and Finn.
But honestly, if they did go full on with the Poe and Finn thing, how exciting would that be?
It would be. I just can't imagine Disney, as the company that just fired James Gunn and brought him back, is ready to do that.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, yeah. I don't. You know, I don't know that. I don't know that those things all equate. You know, that
no.
I'm
just saying that
it's definitely a safe. It's yeah. definitely a safe company. Like I hear what you're saying there, but
I definitely don't think they'll do the graphic sex scene that I think they should do. But, you know, we'll see.
I do like the idea. Something that I think is cool, though. I was trying to think through, like, I do think the Poe and Finn having maybe their own quest in this movie, it's like one of the first times that we'll have like the sort of like buddy adventure, like mm-hmm. in a Star Wars, which is surprising to me. That they're like normally they split off, like they split off the men from the like and send them on different missions, and usually play up the romantic angles. And so the idea of like whether it's platonic or I agree, I don't think they're gonna go with a romantic relationship between the two, but like the idea of like a platonic male friendship, being developed over the course of a movie. I mean, I know we have plenty of that in American cinema. I'm not mm-hmm. saying like there's right. a dearth of it, but I would say that I'm still interested to see it play out in Star Wars. And I think those two actors will bounce off one another really interestingly if they have the opportunity. So
sure. And they're two upstanding gentlemen.
Sure. I think they seem upstanding.
Yeah.
Good, yeah.
We have talked very minimally about Rey and Kylo, and obviously Rey and Kylo are on the cover of this issue, two different issues or two different covers that you could buy on newsstands for those of you who still frequent a newsstand.
Do you know when this got released, I literally was like, where can I buy this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I started
and
going.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I read the whole maybe? Article online, and I'm still probably going to go buy the magazine, which is crazy.
Well, I literally was like, oh, surely they wouldn't put this online. That's too valuable. And then it was just there.
Yeah.
When you go through this, there's not a whole lot about Rey and Kylo. And surprisingly, I mean, not surprisingly, they're not going to give away very much about where those two are. The most interesting thing is the photo, the image of the two of them battling with their lightsabers on what appears to be maybe the top of the Death Star. At least, you know, they're... fighting through waves of some kind. We saw the Death Star downed in a huge body of water.
Oh, I didn't even put that together.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, Mike. All right.
I'm not going to take credit for that. The internet has been talking about it, but yeah.
No, Mike, cut this out. Cut this out. You're the first.
I do like that.
Well, you just look at you see the base. It is, you know, grayish with what looks like some of the trappings of the Death Star. But
you see some.
I literally all I saw when I was looking, I was like, oh, they're on some, you know, some cliff side or like near a waterfall. But I see exactly what you mean. There's some there's some hard angles in there, you know.
One of the most interesting things, though, was the caption for this. And I think it was an Adam Driver quote who talked about that their force connection is maybe a deeper bond than we even knew about in the previous film, which that was a pretty good, strong connection, which delved in deeply into who those characters were and their relationship. Mm-hmm. How much deeper can that bond go? Kind of interesting tidbit that that's where they're taking
this.
I gotta say, and I don't like to subscribe to this idea in movies that like there always needs to be a love story, or if like a male and a female are on screen together, that they have to have some kind of romance. But man, am I a Rey and Kylo shipper?
So you're Reylo. That's what the internet
term. I'm Rey high on being Reylo, baby.
So we're putting that hashtag on our episode. Make sure all the Reylos out there download this episode. Get in on it. It's actually a pretty big trending topic for any Star Wars fans out there.
If it was just them kind of getting away, you know, they get in a quad jumper and they just spend some time out there getting to know each other, I'd be thrilled.
Do you think the end of this movie is them riding off on some Orbacs into the woods with their
newfound northern brethren? I think they'll have to accept that it's not going to work and it'll be heartbreaking for everybody. You know, like in that the second to last Harry Potter movie, 7 part 1, they're like just camping for like
an
hour.
That's the only one I saw.
Yeah.
All right. They're just like camping for an hour. That's what I want to see. But
I want to see them.
I'm not joking. That's the only one of them I've seen, and I thought it was great.
Sam, it's awesome. Full of revelations.
I love this. It's like the reason I liked it so much is I was like, ah, this is what I wanted. Wizards in our world. Like I didn't want to go to
read all of Game of Thrones, watched one movie of Harry Potter's, never seen Top Gun. Who is this guy? We didn't vet him before.
Audiences, if you're freaking out right now, I have not. I'm gonna amend the Top Gun thing ASAP. That was not public knowledge. I'm sorry.
Listen, when it comes to Top Gun, Sam has the need for speed.
He
doesn't even get it.
He doesn't even know what that means.
I'm on the highway.
That explains why there was no reaction.
He doesn't get it.
Chris, did you know previous to the our last episode, which you surely listened to, that
loved every minute of it.
That Sam has read all of the Game of Thrones books.
I did know this. Yes, he was reading them actively when the show came out. Or did you read them before? You read them. The show got you into it, and then you were reading them, and then you're like, oh, these are better.
That's pretty close. It was more about like I wanted to finish it before I watched the show, and then I finished all the books, and I was like, I'm sick of this. it was a good move. Am I right?
I had a friend that told me, he goes, I've been waiting since I was 10 years old to see the ending of this.
He started reading Game of Thrones when he was 10 years old.
He was very young. Yeah.
My God,
that's crazy. Let's get back to this Reylo
thing. How messed up is that guy?
Well, so you brought it up, Sam, and you talked about you brought it up in our conversations before the pod. I think not necessarily the relationship between the two of them, but the interesting way that Adam Driver has been informed about his role from thinking about who Ben Solo was growing up.
This was one of the favorite, and I kind of was picking this up from different parts of this article and some of the supplementary articles that they have on Vanity Fair and the coverage of it, but. One of the things that resonated really well with me, and I think you see it in his performance from The Force Awakens. I think this is where we see why and how Adam Driver has crafted such a great sort of villain, anti-hero, tragic figure, which is that he describes like essentially his approach was that he had two rock star parents, two of the most famous parents in the galaxy who both were people who what they were known for, what they were famous for, what they did best were things that were kind of solitary pursuits. You know, obviously his mother Leia is a general and a resistance leader, and his father was a con man, you know, who turned hero. And the idea that that those two maybe wouldn't make the best parents, but also being the child of those two heroes of the rebellion and the people who felled the original empire would be this enormous amount of pressure. And so it's the simultaneous like inability to live up to the expectations, but also like not having the support needed because those people maybe weren't the best characters. I mean, like all this thought has informed who he is as Ben Solo slash Kylo Ren. And it just made me like tremendously excited to see, because if he's talking about that as the actor, obviously he's been in discussions with, you know, Rian Johnson and J.J. Abrams from the beginning, and everybody. I think they know what they're doing with him, and I think they've really thought it out well, and I cannot wait.
Well, I think what's always been interesting is through interviews and stuff with Adam Driver, his stance has always been that he doesn't think he's evil from his point of view. Like he tries not to think about the larger picture of stuff. He's focused from his lens. And I think that's what's like informing the character so much. Cause if he was just, if you're an actor and you're a bad guy and you're like, well, I do bad stuff and I know what happens to that character and I know why they don't like me, then that's going to change how your performance goes. I think for him, he's saying he believes in his cause and what he's doing. So that's like making a very complex character in a very subtle way. Like we don't necessarily, sometimes he literally says it in the movie because the dialogue is pretty blatant, but other times it's like it comes out more subtly where he's like, he has the opportunity to do something and he doesn't do it.
Well, and just the fact that, I mean, I think one of the moments where we weren't recording the pod at this point, but I remember Chris, definitely. I remember talking about this with you when we saw this. I saw The Force Awakens twice in one day.
Because who did?
It happened. I'm sure a lot of people did. That's not usually my MO. I went to see it with Chris. I came home and then it turned out that my now wife, my then girlfriend, had like missed her screening that she was supposed to see. So it was like, I'll go again. It was a blast, and it was amazing. So I got to see it twice in one day. But one of the things that strikes me in Force Awakens is when he's like having the sort of, he's communing with his grandfather's helmet, Vader's helmet, and he's talking about he's afraid of being pulled towards the light, and that's his conflict. And I just remember thinking like that was a moment where I was just like, I never would have thought of that as a storyteller. I did not in a million years foresee that as a direction they could take this series, and it made him an infinitely more interesting character. And it's the simplest thing. It's a straight up role reversal, but it's so, so good. It informs you totally differently. Cause whereas with Luke, you're, you know, desperately hoping, like, I hope he's not pulled towards the dark side, or with Rey, I hope she's not pulled towards the dark side. But with Kylo, it's like, oh wow, he's being pulled towards the light, and that's bad for him, but good for us. So
that's what you're hoping for. You're hoping for that part of it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, it's interesting you brought that up, Sam, because there, I believe in one of the ancillary articles that go with this, it was mentioned that JJ and Kathleen Kennedy have said that Kylo Ren's character, they knew the arc and they knew the way his story ended when they wrote The Force Awakens, that they've known what they were going to do with Kylo the entire time. To me, that sounds like kind of a public rebuke of the way that people have been like, this story's being made up as it goes along. They haven't had a plan for the trilogy. It's just next movie, somebody's up, a new director, new writers. And I feel like they're trying to reel that back in.
Sure.
That's my cynical point of view on that statement from them.
I mean, they have the notes of George. And I think they probably have a fundamental arc. I can't imagine they would embark on this without having some kind of closure, or like,
well,
it almost would be foolish for them not to, I think, at this point, because they have basically a large responsibility. They know they're going to make three movies. They know that they're going to do this. So it's like,
at that time, JJ wasn't even signed on for the third movie.
Well, I know that, but I would just hope that Disney and the story team in charge would have a general direction for three movies as an arc. I'm sure there's little details and things they change and where characters go and things like that. But I do have to believe them when they say like the overall arc of what happens to these characters probably remain pretty true to what has happened through all three movies.
Also, for all the twists and turns that people feel like The Last Jedi took, it was following through on what they had set up for Kylo, like with the scene that Sam was just describing, like the pull to the light and stuff like that. So even if The Last Jedi went a different direction than JJ would have gone, I think that that was the logical next step to like Kylo's journey. So mm-hmm. even if they had to make some adjustments, it's like in the grand arc of him, I have to imagine that there must have been a conflict in the middle for him. Right. Or else, like, what was his arc?
Oh, yeah, of course.
They may be still be able to play in the same sandbox that they had made.
Well, yeah, what I would think is, like, I this is just to further agree that it's like, I think of course they did. I think of course they thought about, what is the story we're telling over these three films? Who are our characters? Where do they start? Where do they end? I think the criticism, which is both still valid and kind of negated, this whole, you know, the whole thing that people say, oh, it's being made up on the fly, is like, well, it's probably partially true. They probably had a bunch of stuff where they said, like, yeah, in the middle, we need to have Rey conflicted. We need to have, you know, Kylo Ren make, you know, these certain bad choices for, you know, I'd say the one thing that worries me is, like, when they say they had it set from the beginning, I go, okay, does that mean it's a redemption arc? He seems pretty irredeemable right now. That's going to be quite the magic trick to pull off. But then I'm also like, maybe not. You know, they could have thought of anything.
This is Star Wars. It's a redemption arc. I can't imagine they're not going to redeem him. And also, yeah, it's, I don't know. I just would be shocked. They also know what they're playing to. They're trying to play toward the broadest audience. They're not going Game of Thrones on this. They're going to satisfy people.
So what's interesting to me is, I would find Kylo Ren redeemable after the events of The Force Awakens. I mean, I think like patricide is like, yeah, it's a pretty big one, but I think like
it's their family.
Over the course of three movies, you know, you can bring him back from that. I found it more heartbreaking the choices he makes in The Last Jedi, and I think maybe it's because I found that movie, you know, affecting in the ways that I did. But that's where I was like, based on the choices he makes in Last Jedi, is like the thing where I'm like, well, how's he get redeemed now?
If Vader is redeemable, Kylo is redeemable.
Well, I mean, I think that the fundamental part of Star Wars is hope. Like they even say it in Rogue One. Like the thing is hope. There's a hope for a better person. Whether that means he gets, like, to live that redemption.
I mean, they say it when they retitled the first movie.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So,
unless the first scene of Episode 9 is he walks in to a room full of stormtroopers and he's covered in blood, and then one of the stormtroopers goes, "The younglings," and he just nods.
No, he says, "The younglings again."
And more then, younglings?
More younglings?
They're sprouting up like bunnies.
And then he walks into the other room and goes, "Give me more younglings to kill."
Guys, we're really hitting on a couple of really good Star Wars Twitter trends between hashtag Raylo and hashtag Bendemption. These are pretty popular Star Wars Twitter trends.
I like this.
Say.
Wow. This is the machine at work. They're doing a very good job leading us to these questions.
I really like Bendemption. That's great. Whoever coined that, or you know who you are. If you're listening to this right now and you're the first person to use that hashtag, like, I don't know, props.
Red Ben Redemption.
Red Ben Redemption. He has a red lightsaber.
Yeah, have they ever called him Red Ben?
Red Ben.
I think one of the few things we have not talked about is an image that probably doesn't have as much story, you know, for us to pontificate about. But
Anthony Daniels getting his ear cleaned.
Yes, that's the one I'm talking about. Is Richard E. Grant and Donald Gleason, Hux, and the new General Pried or Pride? What do we
Pride.
Think?
It's Pride? Definitely Pride. It's great. I love that because that's the Empire's and the First Order's greatest, you know, sin.
The weakness is pride.
You know, they've always been, they've always overreached. They've always thought they're better than everyone. And I think it's definitely Pride. I love it.
And his boss, Lieutenant Hubris.
Yeah.
Hubris. I guess lieutenant would be below general.
What is a legion general?
He just does everything Hux says. He doesn't defy Hux. He never will.
So does that mean they're cohorts? Because this one says first order leaders, General Hux, and a legion general.
I'm gonna look this up. Talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah, it's. I would love to see. Yeah, Ryan, if you find anything, but in my mind, I think it sounds like you know, on like in our military, we have, you know, general and lieutenant general. And it's like, so I would guess that the allegiant general is like the support. Because I do think Hux is going to be it'll be Kylo Ren, obviously, at the head of the First Order. And then I think Hux will be sort of the lead in command, right? Because that would make sense. We've seen him now for three movies. He kind of has to be in charge. So I think that this Allegiant General either is like his lieutenant, but perhaps is more loyal to Kylo Ren, is more loyal to Hux or the memory of the Supreme Leader Snoke or something. Who knows? Yeah. But like, there might be some infighting, but I mean, it's a great image of these two. They look despicable in
they
the best possible
way. They both look miserable, too. They both look miserable and despicable.
It's exactly wanted Richard E. Grant to be, and he's the character. That's what I expected, and I love it.
Yeah. Also worth noting, Matt Smith, nowhere to be found. Anyway,
is he in this
seems
movie?
That Allegiant General doesn't have a proxy in the real world.
Okay.
Based on this Google search, it has a Wikipedia page. It's a picture of Richard E. Grant.
So I was wondering if Allegiant.
Also, I've learned is that this isn't a lack of endorsement from the droids, but it seems that Allegiant Air is not a very good airline. Based on these,
unless they want to be a sponsor, and we love Allegiant Airlines.
Yeah, I mean, basing this on the reviews. Yeah, right. This isn't. I hope they're not litigious.
We do see that Allegiant General Pride is first of all. I mean, I think it's interesting. He's pictured seated, you know, which is like just it's like both this whole like it's this thing of like power and like looking down upon people and the sort of like posturing. And then he's also got something in his hand. Looks like
it's
he's
like
holding
a stick. Yeah,
I'm like, is it a cane or a staff or is it like?
See, I took it as his thumb, where he's kind of like putting his finger and thumb together.
My God, he's holding his own severed thumb.
Oh my!
Are we sure that he's an allegiant general or allegiant to the general? You know.
Well, that's what I don't know. Yeah, that's very good. I was wondering if it was like a different type of army. Like the general of all the other outskirts that support the First Order or something like that.
Oh, he's been on the Outer Rim for a while?
Yeah, or something like that. He's like the general of the other bad guy army or something like that.
Who finally all came I back want, after Snoke died. He's like, you let this happen, Hux.
I just want Kanja Klum to come back and go, Han Solo, and they'd be like, he's dead, and that would be real sad because they loved chasing him.
Sam, correct me if I'm...
They're like, well, now I have nothing.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Batman Joker kind of thing.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Sam, but Kanja Klum showed up in John Wick 3, I believe.
Kanja Klum.
I think we had some crossover of actors from Kanja Klum.
We absolutely did. That's very cool. We absolutely did. Those guys have a great... the main guy from Kanja Klum has a great great fight scene, and I'll tell you what, he moves very well opposite Mr. Reeves.
Those dudes were originally from The Raid, right?
Yes, The Raid. Yes.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah,
didn't get enough to do in The Force Awakens, sadly.
Also, I'm sorry, this is a subject changer. It is worth noting that they're still shooting this thing on film.
I think it's great. I love it.
It's cool.
I don't
controls
know.
The process.
I care less.
I know. I know you don't care at all. But I think it's cool because it controls the process a little bit.
The marketing of the marketing and publicity of certain directors making a big deal about shooting on film 100% works on me. I absolutely know that technically my eye cannot tell the difference and that it in fact is not only necessarily like not better, but maybe a worse way to make a movie these days.
Sam, that's just what Sony tells you.
But it 100% is so dope to me that they shoot on film. Like, it works. I don't know. But this is me not being in... This is not my industry.
So there you have it.
It is cool that it does restrain the process. I'm sure that a lot of times on set they were like, listen, I'd love to do a few more takes, but, you know, we're shooting on film and we don't have that much of it.
Exactly.
It adds prestige. You know, it feels like what it costs. And so, you know that it adds some amount of, like, it's a statement. It's saying, like, yeah, we value this because we're shooting it on film and that's expensive.
And then the camera has a secret, like, SD card slot in the bottom of it. And like, yeah, just
do you guys
want
to make a guess as to how much, so, like, soup to nuts in terms of, like, buying and then developing, how much a foot of film costs on a film set? I know the answer, but do you guys want to guess?
Oh.
Ooh, wow.
How much a foot, 1 foot of film?
One
cost?
Foot of film
to purchase,
is
develop,
what, is
and
that,
how,
is that even like? Is that even 24 frames or how many?
Yeah, what's a foot of frame of film?
That I don't know.
But okay. I would
25
say,
bucks.
I would say 1 foot of film costs $3,000.
I'll go with $5,000.
Okay. Well, Chris was the closest by far. It's $55.
Okay.
You made it sound like it was insanely expensive.
So it's cheap.
I mean, but like,
so it's
that's
cheap.
So expensive.
What
but
is
no,
the
that's
what
really
is,
expensive.
It's really expensive.
How many feet do you use when you're shooting a movie? Like 4?
If you're me.
Look, if I didn't have a basis for my guess, like, I'm not in the wrong here. Like, I, you know, you couldn't tell
Sam,
me.
If you had a basis for your guess, it'd be like boom, boom, boom.
I'm not saying, I mean, obviously, you know, they shoot thousands of feet of film for the movie.
That's a
but
classic
$55
interaction right there for everybody.
So I'm looking at 90 feet per minute. At 24 frames per second, it's 90 feet per minute.
Oh.
A little bit of crosstalk here happening.
90 feet per minute is 50. So 55 bucks is a minute per 90. 55 times 90 is 1 minute of film.
Yeah, so 450.
Again, Disney dollars, I'm not seeing it as a lot of money.
No, I know, but I'm just saying.
Relative.
I just thought it was an interesting thing for our audience to know.
Mike, relative to zero.
I think it's very interesting.
This was value neutral. I just thought it's just a thing that I knew.
Yeah. Relative to $0.
I think it is interesting.
Yeah.
I do think that there's two potential arguments to still be made for film. One is like the marketing prestige effect. Like I told you, it does affect me. Even if I know, like, you know, an equally great or better film can be shot on digital, like, there is something that feels special. Like, they have sold me on that concept. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is that I wonder if that is also true for actors on set when you have you've talked about the scarcity of it, the idea of, like, oh, we're limited in our takes, and what that, I think that probably, as someone who, you know, used to perform and used to act, on a very different level, obviously. But like, that would affect me. Like knowing I had to hit something, I think, brought a different level of energy and a different, you know, approach to something. So
here's the thing: I am all for people shooting on film. I think it looks beautiful, great. I don't like it when it becomes part of the selling point of the movie. I would give all of the 70mm that Chris Nolan has ever shot on for him to write one solid female character. But it's not his strength, so he has to say he shot it on 70. Yeah, the script for Interstellar is a mess, but I shot it on 70. Who cares?
For the record, I brought up the film part because I thought it was neat.
Chris,
I'm still defending
reap what
the
you
movie.
Sow, my man.
Sam, what if I told you?
No,
every
I think it's
single,
cool that they shot on film.
Every single second of Game of Thrones was shot on film, and you need to now watch it because of that. After what you said,
that can't be true.
I made it all up.
Okay.
I think the biggest
for a dragon union.
Here's the biggest selling point of Game of Thrones, the TV show, at this point for me. They finished it. The guy hasn't written a book in 6-7 years. I don't know. Whenever I finished reading those books, it was like the new one came out while I was reading them. That was book 5. And I bought it and I read it. And then he hasn't written another one. They finished it. That's like, look, man, getting the job done is like, that's the whole job. That's not even half the job. That's the whole job.
All right, back to Vanity Fair and finishing off.
Do what Benioff and Weiss did and just get it across the finish line.
Finishing off the article here, I think some other minor tidbits. We talked about Richard E. Grant, Hux, But also interesting that we're going to learn the origins of the First Order in this movie. That was mentioned, which, so we'll see some pretty substantial flashbacks. Maybe that's the moment where we see Kylo Ren when he's going through the forest and taking down the Knights of Ren. Maybe that's him training unworthy Knights of Ren and killing them off if they weren't good enough for him. I don't know. Flashbacks possible, though. The other thing that really stood out to me...
Could you imagine if this was like a dual timeline movie? That'd be kind of cool. Ooh,
that'd be wild.
Time travel worked pretty well for Avengers Endgame. Maybe we could get that going here in Star Wars as well.
That's true.
Kathy Kennedy...
It's also worked pretty well for Chris Nolan.
Maybe they could all be like locked in a freezer and be like, do you remember that time you fought the Knights of Ren?
Clip show.
It's a trap in, yep.
Bottle episode. So Kathy had comments about Star Wars and trying to make it not obviously to the point of Star Wars fatigue. She said that because it's something that means so much to fans, you can't turn this into some kind of factory approach. You can't even do what Marvel does necessarily, where you pick characters and build new franchises around those characters. This needs to evolve differently. This seems like a comment that was made following past struggles of Solo.
Lesson
because they
learned.
Chose a character that already existed that they tried to do, like, say, Iron Man or Captain America, but we didn't want to see that movie, or at least not a lot of people did. Plus, they did terrible marketing. I'm very interested to find out what the marketing will be for Episode 9, other than it's the end of the saga. They need to do something more than that. Let's get some Pepsi cans with characters back on them, please.
I see where this is going, Mike.
I'm just saying.
Let's get some cereal boxes.
Look, if Stranger Things can bring back...
I'm still holding on to my Enfys Nest 7-Up.
I mean, honestly, at this point, when they're putting the Star Wars logo on... the oranges that I eat. Let's be serious. I'm not eating a lot of oranges, but I see the sticker on these oranges. I hope they just go for broke. I hope we see next level marketing where it's like literally it's against the law to not have a Star Wars sticker on your jacket.
Also, I just please make it something like soda cans. Chris has a whole crate of rotting oranges under his head.
They're collectible.
Look, if Stranger Things can bring back new Coke, I think Star Wars can do something equally
Crystal Pepsi.
Are the kids on that show doing cocaine?
Yeah, that kind of coke.
Wow.
I think we've,
it is the 80s.
We've really covered this pretty well. Anything else from the article stand out we haven't talked about, guys?
Is there anything about anything we haven't talked about?
Oh, we got a lot left in that tank.
No, I think the only poll quote that kind of made me a little sad is this: it wasn't all over when Ewoks sang Obi-Wan died in vain. Even Han Solo.
Yeah,
it's this... all a little less of a fairy tale now. That's like, it's a little a shame.
I mean, it's all a little less of a fairy tale now, but then they also talk about how it's like they always pitched it as a fairy tale where, you know, describing, you know, Ben Solo as like a prince.
This,
the writer didn't know what he was doing.
The point of this is
this
article,
Lev, come talk to me.
Sam hates the article. I think the point of what we're trying to get across here is there's lots of new Star Wars information and it's great.
It's very exciting.
The article,
I could take
or leave the article. We're trying to do a lot here.
We're almost within 6 months of this thing.
Yeah.
So that means we have a few months until Mark Hamill starts complaining about how he wasn't the main character of this one either. But man, oh man, this is a cool piece. I understand that Lev Grossman, from a writing perspective, could have done a better job. But just seeing the images, hearing them talk openly about anything at all that has to do with this movie, very exciting stuff.
Yeah, I think the whole thing was... tremendously exciting. I think the fact that the photos came from the Wadi Rum is very, very cool. It's like, I mean, Annie Leibovitz is an excellent photographer wherever she is, but like these I found to be particular, like the photos are what I'm in for, and they were vibrant and they were exciting, and there is some stuff in there that looks new. I think, it's an exciting day. It's a day I look forward to at this point. Like, Vanity Fair has very successfully cornered a market on, like, you know, providing a thing I look forward to in the run-up to a Star Wars movie. And I'll also just say, in general, with, like, big movies, something I was recently thinking about, you know, we talked a lot about Endgame and the Avengers films, and, you know, I was kind of in the middle of the road. I was trying to avoid spoilers for that. But I realized something that... I do think I'm becoming a person for whom the lead up and the build up and the whole sort of speculation marketing process is like it is what I live for. It's maybe as good or better than the film itself. So we're headed full steam ahead into that period. So I'm just super excited for what's to come. You know, if anybody out there is a new listener, because there's news breaking today and you're just looking for additional, like you just want to hear people talk about it. We're going to be here, through the release of the film. You know, Mike, let you know where you can find us, but write to us. Let us know what like your favorite stuff was. Let us know what stuff you found exciting, what your speculations are. I think we all are, but I'm definitely here for it. I love reading it and I'm planning to be fully sort of engaged, all the way up to release.
For all of you, hashtag Raylo, hashtag Bedemption, welcome to the pod. Thanks for joining us.
Thank
Stay
you so
with
much.
Us. One last thing. We didn't talk about Carrie Fisher. JJ talked about recreating the lighting.
This is a whole episode.
Match, recreating the lighting of what they shot with Carrie Fisher in what they shot in the new movie to make it all match, put it together, and they found a way to get her in the movie and also have her interact with her daughter. Billy Lord wanted that in the movie. That's pretty, I mean, that's amazing. And I mean, I guess I'm not, you wouldn't expect her to say, oh no, I don't want that to happen. It's almost a chance for her to again, not experience, but have another connection with her now passed on mom. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. It is kind of sweet. His quote there is like, somehow it worked and I never thought it would. Like he said it's almost like a spiritual experience of when the pieces started to fall together that he was like, oh, this can actually happen. Like it was almost like it was made for this purpose, which is like, I think very encouraging.
Follow us on Twitter, DroidsPod, Instagram, DroidsPod, Facebook, The Droids Podcast. Email us, droidspod@gmail.com. We want to hear from you. Rate us and review us on iTunes and anywhere that you listen to this podcast. We'll have more next week on the pod. Join us again for The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. What they
wrote. Annie?
You boys want to go to medieval times?
Hashtag Bendemption.
Hashtag Bendemption. Yup.
Raylo Janker.
Wow.
One quarter portion.